You're supposed to start any show, any presentation with an attention getter, right? You have to start with an attention getter, and then you establish your plot or thesis after that, right?
Well, when you're writing a paper, starting a segment?
Anything. It's all the same thing. This is basically what we're doing on a daily basis is a live paper.
A term paper?
Term paper. So Sam Mellinger, will you please say
to our... Well, that's not true because I wouldn't do it then.
You'd fake your way through it, which is what you do every morning.
I'd cheat.
Well, same thing.
We should go different directions.
Sam Mellinger, please start our hour with you with what you just said to me in the commercial break because I would like for that to serve as our attention getter.
You can't be mad at your dog for not cooking your dinner.
I love that line. Jake, has your dog ever cooked you dinner?
Not yet.
Could it?
She might be able to.
Would you expect her to?
She needs to start pulling her weight around there.
This is
sure.
A man who does shower with his dog.
True.
Wait, what? Was that the attention getter we should have started with?
How is he supposed to clean a dog? How do you clean yourself, Sam? Do you take showers?
I do.
Do you get clean?
Yeah.
Well, 2 + 2 equals 4.
Argue that, Mr. Well, columnist. Okay.
Go get the attention now.
I never know what I'm going to hear in here.
No,
every week we try to give you something that you didn't expect.
I shower with my dog, Sam, and she's a clean pooch.
This is all true.
Yeah.
But
sweet, sweet Lena girl.
I love that line. You can't be mad at your dog for not cooking you dinner. The context behind this was you ruffled some feathers in the Bucati household, apparently, with your column.
Yeah.
As we gathered for my son's birthday yesterday, my dad sat down next to me and opened up the conversation. And I'm sure that each one of you gets this question at some point from someone. You might not expect it from your dad, but you get it. So what do you think about the Chiefs? Boy, there's an open-ended question, Dad. Well, there's a lot of things to think about the Chiefs, but usually what I realize is that means I want to tell you what I think about the Chiefs.
But I'm going to let you go first.
So I said, well, what do you think, Dad? And he said, well, I know you have that Sam Mellinger on your show, and I know he seems like a pretty good guy, but sometimes I wonder if he just writes things to get people wound up. So first of all, would you like to answer that accusation, Sam? Are you just writing things to wind people up?
Every day of my life, man. That's
is that the number one goal as you sit down?
Piss off Nate's father-in-law.
Well, that's not... No, my dad.
Oh, your dad?
My father-in-law is a pretty... he's a pretty stoic man in general. But my dad, on the other hand, does not need much provocation to be driven to anger.
Usually what drives him to anger. Good morning, Mr. BK.
I'll tell you another thing.
I don't call him Steve.
What's so great about it?
I call him Mr. BK. You call me Steve, Jake. Nope. I call him Mr.
That's right. Yeah, because he doesn't really mean it.
Right. I know. Like, he doesn't. You call him Steve, that disrespectful a hole, Jake. And
kids. So what he was miffed about was your assertion after the game on Thursday that the offense was in any way culpable for that loss.
Yeah.
You score 28 points at home against the 6th-ranked defense in the NFL, and all the offense, and you have a 14-point lead. That's on the defense. How could he possibly blame the offense for that? And that led to your quote, which is going to be my mantra for the day.
Yep. Don't blame the dog. First of all, Mr. Bucati.
I hope he's awake right now, by the way.
Whoever wants to blame the defense, like, I'm not going to get in your way. They stink. We all know that, right? By this point.
I think it's been pretty well established.
Isn't that why the punt there in the second quarter on 4th and maybe 2?
4th and 3, I think it was.
4th and 3, yeah. From about the 40, 42, mm-hmm. Something like that, was a little bit baffling to some of us. But... You have this rocket ship offense. You have the best offense in the league. Get a first down. Get a first down. Like, that's, you know, that's pretty basic stuff. And I think the guys on the offense were saying that too. And look, like, they're all going to, you know, accept the blame and everything. The defense, certainly they better anyway. But if you're trying to win a game and you're the Chiefs, don't you want your offense on the field, not the defense? Isn't that your best face?
I'm 100% in agreement with you. Part of coaching is putting your players in a position to succeed.
Yeah.
Right? And you realize that you have some players that are more capable of succeeding in certain circumstances than others. So if I pinch hit Chris Getz in a situation where I need a home run, shame on me, because Chris Getz does not hit home runs. I don't know why Chris Getz, of all people, just popped into my head, but I was trying to think of somebody that like never hit home runs.
You got one.
He hit two, Nate. That's...
Right. So like if I'm putting him in a situation where I need a home run, then that's my fault.
Right.
Well, Chris Getz is a terrible home run hitter. Yep. And that's why I shouldn't have asked him to hit
home run
for me.
That's what you get.
Wow. Mm. So, yes, this team will go as far as the offense takes.
Yes, we're
making.
And look, nobody's covering for the defense here, right?
Like, nobody's saying that Bob Sutton deserves a raise.
that is not the point here. But yeah, I mean, you just said it, that this team is going to go as far as, I mean, relying on this defense to win you a game is a bold strategy. You know what
bold
I mean?
Bold is one word for it.
Yeah. So
I would choose ignorant.
Yep. That too. So if the whole team collapsed at the end of that game, which it did, special teams even with that penalty on the kick return, you know, aren't you a little bit more disappointed in your offense for you know, taking part in that? And even just like one first down would have, you know, moved the field a little bit, would have taken off more clock. Two, I think, would have ended the game. Would have absolutely ended the game. Phillip Rivers does not get the ball back. There is no 2-point conversion where they just forget to cover somebody. By the way, didn't you think that was a rub route? Like watching live, you're like, oh, that had to be a rub route. That was not a rub route.
No, there's no contact. Like, no contact.
That just,
but that's where they lined
the Chiefs
up.
Chiefs defenders, I mean, kind of rubbed each other.
Right. Barely.
Man. I mean,
did you hear that next gen stat for the closest defender to Mike Williams when he caught the ball? 10.6 yards.
It might as well have been 50. I mean, it really, yeah, like.
But I mean, you're talking about a play from the 3-yard line, right? Right. A 3-yard line, the goal line, basically, right?
Yeah.
10.6 yards is the length of the end zone.
They had his second read covered, though.
Well, good for them.
Really well, by the way. Triple
my
covered.
My goodness.
You know, breakdowns in coverage happen. I saw it happen. I mean, I was watching games yesterday, and but
is that a breakdown?
Well, yeah. I mean, somebody didn't know who to guard. So that's all it was. I mean, that's why the guy was 10 yards open. It might as well have been 50, because they didn't guard him. They didn't. Someone did not defend
him.
It's
got to be a better word than
to.
Breakdown.
But I did say this earlier, though. As much as there are flaws that were exposed all over the NFL by supposed Super Bowl contenders, it does make me realize that, okay, the Chiefs have flaws, but so does everybody else. But I said this to Jake earlier. With what's going on with this offense right now, unless they get some guys back, and they're not getting Kareem Hunt back, the defense is going to have to be a little bit better than what it has been this year if they're going to do anything in the postseason, right? Like they
absolutely.
Because this offense isn't quite as good as it was earlier this year, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, Kareem Hunt, that is... that's a loss. I do think that Sammy Watkins matters. I'm on that train.
Yeah.
And if and when Sammy Watkins returns, I think that he changes the way that teams defend. I think he creates a little bit more space for Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, who are the best two, you know, not curly haired players on this team, or on the offense. You know, I think that matters. Absolutely. But it's not, like you said, Kareem Hunt is not coming back. And Spencer Ware and Damien Williams, talented as they are, they're just simply not Kareem Hunt. That puts more on the quarterback. I think he's capable of you know, of that being fine. But yeah, the defense has to be, they don't have to be good, but they just have to get to the point where, and they're getting closer to this, just more pressure on the quarterback to force just a random few stops, you know, some turnovers, you know, get one, two turnovers a game and maybe force four punts. And I think that that is an absolute win for this defense. And they're getting a little bit closer. Justin Houston played a hell of a game on Thursday. That was as good as he's been. Chris Jones continues to be just an absolute
fantastic
monster. D Ford, we didn't hear from a whole lot. The secondary's going to take a hit, although I think kind of a temporary hit with Kendall Fuller.
What's going to happen there? Do we know?
Seems like a surgery. You're out for, excuse me, a week or two, right? Isn't that what I read?
Gosh, that's crazy.
I mean, he played with it, yeah. So you know, he's not going to be at full strength, obviously. But anyway, the point is the bar again, much like a dog cooking you dinner, the bar for this defense is just lower. So you don't need these guys to hold a team to, you know, 15 points or whatever. All you need is to get some turnovers. You know, I do think that with this defense, judging them by points and yards, you know, traditional methods, kind of misses the point because we all know what they are. And I'm getting a little bit too close for a lot of people's comfort in complimenting Bob Sutton, who I don't believe should have his job right now. But here's one point I do want to make about him. It seems like he is embracing this a little bit. It seems like they are, you know, going a little bit more all out for that turnover, you know, for that random stop to just go all out to get the quarterback. It seems like that's been more a part of the plan than it was at the beginning of the season. I think the results have been marginally better. But the point that I think we're all trying to make here is that if they get in a shootout, they need to win it with the ball in Patrick Mahomes' hands. You know, that's how this has to go. Because if that defense is on the field and you're up four or five or whatever, and you know, anything but a touchdown, and you win the game, I don't think you feel good in that situation. But if you're down four or five and the ball is, you know, the offense has the ball, Patrick Mahomes is throwing the ball, and anything but a touchdown and you lose, I think you feel good about that.
You're not leaving early, unless you're the people that were sitting next to me during the Ravens game. I mean,
that's a great story.
It's just, it's, but yeah.
You haven't heard from them, by the way, have you?
No.
Because that would be awesome.
They're like, hey, awesome. By the way, leave us alone. I want to talk about the difference that Eric Berry did or did not make in the game with Sam Mellinger as we come back. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. On Friday, I tweeted out a video that caught my eye when I went back and watched the Chiefs game. It was in the first half when Eric Berry was on the field and the Carson Chargers had trips to the left. And Eric Berry is furiously trying to get Orlando Scandrick and Kendall Fuller to line up correctly. And of course, it's loud. It's Arrowhead Stadium. The crowd's going crazy. So he has to really yell loud. But he looks like he is just... He looks like I look when I'm trying to implore my children to pick up wrappers after themselves on the kitchen floor. He just looks like he is just... He's just had it. And right before the snap, he gets them lined up the way that he thinks they're supposed to be lined up. It was one play. But of course, there was a play at the end of the game that you might recall, in which Eric Berry was not on the field, and there were trips to the other side of the field, and the it was just twins, wasn't it? It was just two receivers over there, but there were three defenders.
Yeah, it was just
there,
a stack,
and they didn't know who to guard, and we've covered that. I'm cherry picking two plays here, Sam, but am I overstating the importance of Eric Berry on the field, and am I making too much of the one play that I sent a video out of?
It sure as hell doesn't look like it. You know what I mean? Like, it sure looks like, you know, your analogy is the first one that came to my mind too, of just kids, like, pick up your freaking toys. I'm tired of asking
you
for the 12th time.
How many times do I have to ask someone to flush a toilet in this house?
That's exactly what.
How many times?
That's exactly.
Sorry about that.
That's exactly what it looks like. And then on the play that the second play you're talking about, the 2-point conversion, Kendall Fuller, is it Fuller? It's Scandrick and Steven Nelson, I think, are talking to each other. And no, I'm sorry, Fuller and Scandrick. And they are as far away as you and I are right now, you know, a yard, 2 yards, whatever. And I get that it's loud and it's hectic, it's chaos and all that stuff. But it looks like they're talking about, what are we going to do here? Are we going to switch? Are we going to stay with our man? And it looks like Scandrick says, stay with our man, no switch, which is how they've been playing those things all year long, by the way. And I think that that context matters. And then the play happens and Scandrick switches. And that's why the guys, that's what it looks like to an untrained, right. An untrained eye. And yeah, I mean, you would like to think that if Eric Berry, you know, not just being a really smart, you know, focused, quick-minded, if I can make up a term, individual, but also just sort of the gravity that he brings, the respect that he brings in those situations, you would hope that they would be lined up in the right way. And more importantly, lined up in the right way is one thing. More importantly, know who the hell they're supposed to cover in that situation. You would think that that's how that would have gone. All that has to happen, and look, like, I think you and I agree on this too, that I think that coach on the field or leadership and all these things like can be vastly overstated a lot of times by people like us, you know. Mm-hmm. Fans do it too, but certainly media, I think, in this way kind of leads the charge in talking about you know, leadership and grit and all that stuff. I do think that Eric Berry's a little bit different, and to make a big difference, he doesn't have to be Superman every damn play. To make a big difference, all he has to do is keep a disaster or two from happening in a game or in a half. And I think that he probably did that at some point in the clip that you sent out, and probably some others that we didn't even notice. Now, did a receiver get behind him a time or two? Yes, that also happened. Did he make a smart read on the blitz on the second play of the game that, you know, resulted in a lofted ball that was Nelson, right?
Yep.
That made the interception.
Yes.
Yes, that also happened. You don't have to be Superman every play. All he has to do is be consistent and squash the disasters before they happen.
I think he makes a huge difference for this team. And I said it before he was coming back, and I stand by it after watching the game. I understand that, yeah, he got beat on a couple of pass plays, which makes him just like every other safety on the team.
That's right.
But the other stuff that
it's
he
like,
does.
Yeah, so?
Yeah.
Yeah? He got burnt? Yeah, so?
Like when I heard people say, well, they had to get him off the field.
No.
What? No. Then they have to take every safety off the field of this team. None of them can cover anybody. And they can't cover Antonio Fat Gates. Fat Antonio Gates. Not Hall of Fame Antonio Gates from 10 years ago. They couldn't cover Fat Antonio Gates. So if Eric Berry's getting run by a wide receiver every once in a while, okay. But the things that he does that no other safety on this team can do. He had 6 tackles in one half of football. And they were all against the run. And they all stopped running plays from becoming good plays. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that doesn't happen on this team. No linebackers, no safeties on this team ever stop the run. They don't do it.
There was 3 plays that stick out to me that he made. One was the blitz that we just talked about. There was another when the Chargers were going, I think, left to right on the TV screen. And he took on, I think it was a tight end as a blocker, and shoved that man aside and made the tackle for maybe like a 2-yard gain on the run. There was another one close to the goal line where they gave the ball to Jackson up the middle, and Berry just shot the gap and made the tackle, and it was either no gain or 1 yard. He was, you know, right at the line of scrimmage. Those plays have not happened once all season by a safety, like the, you know, those kinds of things. And he did that in a half, a little bit less than a half, because I don't think he played that last drive. So he absolutely makes a difference. But I think one of the issues that people have, like of expectations and then reality, is when we talk about this, he makes a huge difference. He makes a huge difference. You expect him to be, again, Superman on every play. That doesn't have to be the case.
No.
All he has to do is again, be consistent, be the adult in the room, on the field, you know, tell people where to be, and make some plays like that, and that stuff starts to add up. It absolutely starts to add up. Like, there's a lot of different factors. So, you know, boiling it down to this is, you know, a little bit, can be misleading or a little bit dangerous or whatever. But it's also true that they gave up 7 points in the first half and they gave up 22 in the second half. That matters. You know, that kind of thing matters as well.
I think both turnovers were in the first half too, right? I believe so.
Yeah.
Eric Murray could have had another interception in the game, but I think both turnovers and the sacks, everything was happening in the first half, and that's not all Eric Berry. You're right. But I just think it makes a huge difference. Do you think he plays four quarters on Sunday night?
I do. I do. I think that he is a little bit further along. You know, I think he mentioned this after the game that he could have played against Baltimore.
Yeah.
You know, and I know some people were pissed off about the didn't feel it in my spirit line, but I think what he meant was, look, far be it for me to put words in that man's mouth, but I think what he meant was I felt 95%. I wanted to be 100% before I get out there. I wanted to be, you know, completely okay. I think that, so my point is that may have been more of a football shape kind of thing. That may have been, you know, conditioning. You can be in good shape, but playing a real NFL game is a whole, you know, you got adrenaline that's going to drain you, all that stuff. 10 days to rest, you know, played basically one half. Yes, I think he's going to play all four quarters. He may not play every snap. You know, they may sit him for a series or something like that, but I do believe that he'll play in the fourth quarter.
I took it to mean that it just didn't seem like the right decision when you're going to have another game in 4 days or whatever it was.
That matters too. Yeah, right. That's a great point. I'm curious if the Chargers game was on Sunday, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because part of this whole getting into game shape, whatever the sport is not just the playing the game itself, it's the recovery.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have the time to recover, so I'm hopeful too that he plays four quarters, and I think he makes a difference.
They're going to need him, because what you said just a couple minutes ago is critically important about the, you know, he's so good against the run. And that team, the Seahawks are a monster in the run game, and the Chiefs, not so much in stopping the run game. And I do think that he makes a huge difference right there.
I was watching that Seahawks 49ers game yesterday, and look, Seahawks lost. They showed that they're far from a perfect team themselves. This Chris Carson runs angry. He is physical. He's 220 pounds, and he bounces off tackles.
By the way, Seattle leads the league in rushing. So just number one, and it's by a couple hundred yards. I mean, they have 21-68 on the year. The Ravens have 1,986 yards. And, you know, it's they gouge you like 4.7 per.
Yeah,
you know, it's they. That's their identity.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be a bad matchup, doesn't it, guys?
It does. I mean, I hate this.
I think Eric Berry makes a huge difference in that regard.
He does. He makes a gigantic difference. But, you know, I've said from about 3 weeks ago, Chiefs needed that Chargers game because I still don't have a good feeling going into Seattle. I don't like it.
What's the spread? Have you looked at the line?
I will look right now.
You know what's wild about that number, too, is 4.7 per carry. And I just looked this up. They're second in the league in rush attempts. So that means they're rushing more than everybody but the Ravens, and they're still carving you up for a pretty good average. That is a horrendous matchup.
2.5, minus 2.5, Kansas City.
The Chiefs are favored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the Seahawks just lost to the 3-9 San Francisco 49ers. As much as people in this town are freaking out about losing to an 11-win Chargers team on the last play of the game after leading the entire game. Mm-hmm. Seattle just lost at San Francisco. You know, I mean, this is the NFL. These are not perfect teams. They are not a great team. They're a good team.
I'd also point out that I feel like Seattle is one of the toughest places in the league to play. I agree with all that. But sometimes people are acting like, you know, like this is just an impossible assignment. They've lost two home games there. They were good teams. It was the Rams and the Chargers, I believe. But still,
correct.
They've lost games.
They're 4-2 at home.
Yeah, they've lost games in that building. They're not just like invincible.
But the Chiefs are 5-2 away from home this year.
Yeah.
You know, I personally don't believe that home field advantage is in the NFL what it once was. You know, I think that communication from offenses has gotten to the point now where they know how to deal with crowd noise. I mean, back when we were kids, and the NFL tried to institute rules against the crowd being too loud and stuff like that, offenses couldn't function.
Yeah.
Because it's like everything was verbal cadence and all that stuff. Everybody runs shotgun now. Everything's on a silent count. You know, I mean, I will say this, like, being at the game on Thursday night, and I was out in the crowd, so when you're in the press box, sometimes you almost don't hear how loud it is because the windows are sealed.
Yep.
I was out there in that noise, and that last drive of the game, it was insane. And I came away, I'm amazed seeing Phillip Rivers and that entire offense function when 70,000 people are trying to do everything they can to keep you from functioning, and they went right down the field and they scored and then they hit a 2-point conversion. I've seen Patrick Mahomes do the same thing in Denver, mm-hmm. in New England. I know they didn't end up winning the game in New England, but he kept making plays over and over again. I just don't think that home field advantage is in today's NFL what it once was. I really don't.
I think the numbers back you up on that. I mean, you'd rather play Seattle,
of course,
not in Seattle,
of course,
right? Like you know, that seems like an obvious point. Sorry, but yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to that. There's a lot to that. I also think, and maybe this is just in my head because non sequitur a little bit, but after the KU Villanova game on Saturday, and I thought Bill Self said something really interesting about the crowd. Somebody asked, you know, God, it's so much better to play at home, right? And he was like, look, love the crowd and all that stuff, but I do say, I'll tell you this, I think that they focus the other team as well, because other teams come in here and they're pumped to play in this building and they get more focused. We get their best effort mm-hmm. because of this as well. And I think that's, you can compare that across sports. Like, I think that kind of thing exists. You know, you hear athletes all the time say, the best feeling in the world is to shut up, you know, the opposing crowd. The best feeling in the world is to accomplish something, score a touchdown, hit a three-pointer, dunk, score a goal, whatever, and the crowd just shuts up. I think there's part of that too. It brings, you know, a team a little bit closer. I think that's an element as well.
I think part of the reason that the Seahawks sucked yesterday is because they played in a half-empty stadium in a crowd that had nothing to cheer for.
Yeah.
You know, they looked flat for the first half of that game. That's what the announcers kept talking about, was, oh, the Seahawks look like they're not even ready for this game. You know,
one more real quick point about home field advantage too. There's this book, I reference it probably more than I should, but called Scorecasting. Did you read this?
No.
They isolated home field advantage. They, you know, and this is the nerd in me, right? But they isolated all these numbers across, you know, not just different sports, but different countries, different, you know, different leagues, Premier League, you know, Major League Baseball, NFL, all that stuff. And they isolated basically home field, home court, home ice advantage to referee calls. And I think that one point that, you know, we should mention this, that in the NFL, you get challenges now. So those calls that used to just by human nature, more often than not, go against the road team, be in favor of the home team, now those calls are getting corrected. And I think that matters as well.
It does, but I think the Chiefs fans would point out, then you also have games where you go to New England and there's not a single holding call. You can't challenge those.
Right.
And obviously any fan who's ever cheered for their team, you know, that's played in Allen Fieldhouse would tell you, you know, that it makes a
totally.
Huge difference.
Yep.
But I think if people, I know Curtis and Seren have looked into it, and across the board in the Big 12, the home team gets way more calls mm-hmm. than the road team does, not just at Allen Fieldhouse. And I think you're right about that. Maybe the refs are more influenced by the crowd anymore than the athletes themselves are.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that game at Allen Fieldhouse with Sam when we come back on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Was there some significance to this song?
Or no, just wow! I haven't heard this in a while.
What a song,
Jake!
What an album, by the way. This entire two
man.
CD set.
I mean, it's the holiday season, right, guys?
Oh,
that's
man!
Right.
Tupac. Oh man!
Where are you from? Where are you from?
We're all enjoying the Marcus Peters yelling at a fan in the stands last night footage.
That guy's a disaster. And I was a huge, I mean, I couldn't have been against him, trading him more, but makes sense. I mean.
Well, I will say this, the defense has not gotten better.
No, no.
Without him.
But the locker room might have.
But maybe the team yeah. did.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe the team did because.
Look, he was never going to stay
here. He's not sabotaging Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
Not threatening people in the crowd.
That's one of those scenarios that it's impossible to know.
Right.
Because I've had somebody ask me this weekend, you know, how much better would this defense be if they had Marcus Peters? I don't know.
Right.
They would be. I don't know. I mean.
It's.
Yeah.
I'll say this, and few, if any, were, you know, bigger fans of Marcus.
Me too,
and more
dude.
Against the the trade. It's hard to make that case at the moment.
Nope.
Right? It is as bad as the Chiefs are defensively. It is hard to make that case. Kind of reminds me, there was a if I can just tell a really quick story.
We got all day, buddy.
In 2014, I don't know if you guys remember Aaron Brooks, was that his name? The pitcher that they brought up for like one spot start in Toronto.
I don't remember much of 2014.
So somebody in the front office told me the story that he went to the meeting. They were there, you know, who should we bring up for this game? And I forgot the other guys, but he's like, I just sat there and I started screaming and I pounded on the table and I said, look, I don't know if Aaron Brooks is going to go eight and give up two runs or whatever, but I'll tell you this, he's not just going to be a disaster. He's not going to, you know, give up 10 in the first or whatever. And if you remember that game, Aaron Brooks was just an unmitigated disaster in the game. So the guy that's telling me this story, you know, that's the implication. He just looks at me and goes, oops. I feel like that of arguing as passionately as I did against the Marcus Peters trade right now. Whoops.
Well,
my buddy Joel just texted me with a valid point. Hey, maybe watch your blank talking if you're sitting in the first row in that game. Like, you're going to get checked.
That's true.
You're going to get checked. Be aware.
I think I'd watch my blank talk anywhere in that stadium, to be perfectly honest with you.
It's an interesting spot, man.
Just about anywhere.
Sam was in there. It's it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kansas basketball games are the closest thing to NBA games around here in terms of the fact that when there's a big game, like, the celebrities are spotted there. And so on Saturday, it was a big game, and Garrick Dieter was there.
That's right.
And when Garrick Dieter's somewhere, you also know that means Patrick Mahomes is there.
Former big leaguer LaTroy Hawkins.
That's his godfather, correct?
That is correct.
And also the uncle of Elijah Johnson.
Godfather.
He's Elijah Johnson's godfather as well.
I asked him this. I think he said he has five godchildren.
That's
is that
lot.
How you would say it? Godsons, yeah. I would guess. And three of his own. I think that's right.
Wow.
Must be a hell of a guy.
I thought LaTroy Hawkins was his uncle. Is it both? Is he his godfather and uncle?
I don't know.
Anyways, but he was there. And you tweeted out something that I said on Twitter. I just don't know how to react. I don't know how to feel about this. And people assume that this meant that I was critical of it, and I'm not. I honestly don't know how to feel about it. Patrick Mahomes got a much bigger standing ovation than did George Brett.
It wasn't even close, man.
How am I supposed to feel about that?
I think there's a lot going on there, right? A huge part of it is this is a college basketball game. They were seated next to the student section. Those students, 2018, freshmen were born in 2000. George Brett was not just retired, but had been inducted into the Hall of Fame for a couple of years already. You know what I mean? Like, George Brett is, right?
Yeah.
George Brett is a story that the parents of those kids tell.
That's what I said earlier. He is to those kids what Len Dawson was to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Len Dawson through stories from my dad and him as a broadcaster. I don't know Len Dawson. I didn't get to watch Len Dawson, the player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, George Brett is the old guy that they showed in the playoffs, like celebrating, you know, with big Royals wins. And even that was 3 years ago. A lot of these, you know what I mean? Patrick Mahomes is doing it every freaking week. You know, on your television screen.
And sports is about currency. I mean, it's, you know, the biggest stars are the ones that are doing it right now. Mm-hmm. I get all that. But has there been an athlete in Kansas City over the last 15 years who would have gotten a bigger round of applause than George Brett, even at the height of his career? Maybe Hosmer would have?
I wonder about the two that come to mind, Eric Hosmer and Tony Gonzalez. I wonder about that.
Yeah.
Because if you go back further than that, if you go back to Derek Thomas, then George Brett's still playing.
Yeah, he was still relevant. Yeah. I mean, he's still relevant, but I mean, as an actual player and everything.
Yeah.
It's
those
just,
are the only two. I wonder, like, what if they introduced Priest Holmes, you know, in 2003?
Yeah.
I wonder about that.
I mean, and like I said, the reason I said I don't know how to feel about it is it's just I've never lived in a world where there's a bigger sports star in Kansas City than George Brett.
Yeah.
And we've all said it since they drafted Patrick Mahomes. If he goes on to win a Super Bowl, he'll be bigger than George Brett.
He'll be the biggest thing in Kansas City sports history. Yes.
And it kind of seems like he already is.
Mm-hmm. he's right now it's on style.
Yeah.
And if you get a Super Bowl, then it's on substance and style.
Yeah.
You know, that I think that's the difference. Because he is, we say this every week, like better than anyone could have realistically imagined in year one. And I believe, and I don't think you guys are going to disagree with this, I believe he is simply too good to not win a Super Bowl at some point in his career. Like, I think that is going to happen. He is he is an otherworldly talent. And so that's going to, so right now, when he gets a bigger ovation at a KU game or wherever it's going to be than George Brett, it's like, oh, wow, that's different. But if he wins a Super Bowl, then it's like, you're damn right. You are damn
yeah,
right.
Yeah, there's, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's 100% justifiable. And I think you're right about him winning a Super Bowl. I think about how many of these otherworldly quarterbacks have, it seems like outside of like Marino, they've all won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But it's crazy how many like won one.
I know Aaron Rodgers is the one. Like
Drew Brees. Yep. Maybe he'll win another one this year.
Yep. Rodgers, I mean, that's on Mike McCarthy, right? Like that's like the
and the you know, front the, office, the, I guess.
The first line of McCarthy's New York Times obit is gonna be who only won one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers.
I guess I kind of feel like Peyton Manning really only won one.
Yeah.
I mean, he won two, so I
you know,
didn't
it's
say
it's
that.
Wild to think about,
not
right?
Fair
because
to say that.
Yeah, because he got dragged by an incredible defense.
Yeah.
You know, to that second one. But I think about John Elway too. John Elway never won one until he was like sort of just a supportive guy.
Yeah.
Until they had Terrell Davis, you know, running for 2,000 yards.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing, man. It's a weird thing. But I think that quarterbacks make a bigger difference now than they did 20 years ago. Like well, the way that the rules are set up and called, you know, I think quarterbacks have a bigger influence. It's still pretty crazy that Aaron Rodgers has only won one so far. That's pretty bonkers to me because he is, I think to me, he's the best quarterback of all time. I believe that.
I think he's, it's funny. I said that several years ago when he was first starting his ascendancy and Jake and I were arguing about, you know, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers and all that stuff. And of course, Jake was like, you know, the Packers are stupid to move on from Brett Favre. And I said, no, Aaron Rodgers is going to be phenomenal. And then as Jake and I tend to do, we dig our heels even further into whatever stance we have. So I said, you know, not only is he great, he's going to be the best quarterback that's ever lived.
Yeah.
And I've been mocked for that because he's not as accomplished, obviously.
No, he's not. But I believe that just like from a talent point of view.
His accuracy, his mobility, his arm strength.
Oh, my God.
But Patrick Mahomes seems to have all those things.
He does, doesn't he?
And something else, too.
Yep. Be careful because Dan Marino went to one Super Bowl and didn't win it. And he was...
And early too, like his second year as a starter, or first year,
rookie year.
He started some games. What was his rookie year?
His rookie season.
Okay, I thought he started some games.
No, his rookie year went to the Super Bowl, never saw it again, and he was
look at some point.
He was a next level. I mean, he was.
Yeah. They're gonna have to put a defense. If they can put a defense with Patrick Mahomes, I think it's a foregone conclusion. But
an average defense.
There you go.
The 16th best defense in the league.
Chiefs gonna win on Sunday.
I kind of think they are, man. I really do. I
what kind of score do you think it's going to be?
Well, the lower it is, the less chance, right?
Over-under is 54. What do you got?
54. I go over. I've been saying over on every freaking game that they've had.
Pretty
you know?
Safe bet.
I mean, but 54, like that game on Thursday, which is a relatively low-scoring game for the Chiefs, would have gone over that, right? Like that was 50, what, 7?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. I don't know, 34-30? It's going to be, like, it's such an interesting game because one team, like, they better run the ball 40 times, you know?
Oh, they will.
And the other team, you know, their best moments are going to be when the quarterback's, like, escaping the pocket and looking downfield, and, nope, there's Tyreek.
I'll tell you what's going to shake out. If the Chiefs win, it's not going to be considered by some to be against one of the best teams in a must-win game. And if the Chiefs lose, Patrick Mahomes is 0-4 against the best teams he's played against this year. That's how it's going to shake out. Yeah. That's the, and now we're going to find out if anybody out there has a dog who can cook him dinner, Sam, because of you. Thanks, buddy.
All right, man.
Sam Mellinger, what do you got? Minutes coming up today?
I do. Yep.
Check him out on Twitter. Mellinger Minutes coming up later. We've got Adam Teicher joining us next on the Border Patrol.